Blog Talk Radio.
Ignorance that they had caught us in, and now many want to apologize, but
they're not apologizing to us in the manner that we're needed to apologize. So we need to show them, you know, what it is that we need for them to do so we can take their apology sincere. And so my song, Too Late to Apologize, you know, I don't need your apology any longer. I need for you to react and respond to us that we're no longer accepting the terminology saying that we are the N-word, the Negro, the Black, or African Americans. And this is why I believe it was important to continue this conversation. The N-word, the title of it is the N-word, Our Own Genocide Ignorance. And then we also, I like to talk about, get white out your life. Get healthy. I'm on this, I've been going on 3 weeks now that I'm on a diet. And it just hit me. I mean, it kind of had a little metaphor. Okay? It had an epiphany. You know, because I'm trying to get the white. So, you know, this diet says get all the white out your life. You know, potatoes, you know, rice, you know, bread, sugar. And then it hit me. Hell, we trying to pass a new legislation to get white or get color off the table. Get white off your life. What I said, I like it like an epiphany. I'm like, wait a minute. Shoot, we the descendants of Americans. Like, matter of fact, we need to be telling all those who still self-identifying as Negroes, Blacks, and African Americans, get white out your life. Get healthy. And I thought about it that, think about it. We are unhealthy because we were forced or we had to learn how to survive from eating unhealthy that caused us to still be here. So we still practicing those behaviors and eating and consuming food and everything is totally unhealthy to us. And guess what? If we solely focus on get white out your life, all the white products and everything out your life, you will start losing weight. I've already lost 4 pounds already, you know, 5 pounds already in 2 weeks from getting all the white out of my life. So that's another conversation. You know, we'll probably expand on, but I wanted to drop that in there, and so all my friends can probably help me put that together. I ain't no medical professional and everything when it comes to health, but we're going to try to get some people to help us to do that. But we want to put together some type of campaign that talks about get white out to life until 2019. You know, how many pounds can you lose? Can you lose 50 pounds? Maybe like a dollar a pound. And maybe that $50 that 50 pounds that you lose, you can contribute that $50 to being a member or part of the Dossie movement. But that's another conversation. Let me just stay focused following one course until successful. Let me go ahead and bring my co-host on the show with me. What's up, Queen? How you doing, girl?
I'm good. I'm good and blessed to be here. How are you today?
Well, I'm trying to carry out the wishes of my president and tone down my conversation, not be so passionately all over the place and everything. I'm trying to exercise some discipline and self-control and stay focused and say that we have a purpose in everything we're trying to do. And so everything I do represents the people that I love and want to see us do so much better. So I'm just trying to practice, and I'm going to need your help, Miss Queen. I mean, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to need your help, okay? So, you know, I said to you off the air, I'm giving you permission to get with me, okay? And I also want to publicly acknowledge, welcome to the family. Welcome to the family, a Dossie family. I want to congratulate you for passing the test of coming to the family.
Yay!
I appreciate you, girl. Yay! You are officially a part of this family. And ain't no turning back now. Now, I'm going to tell you now. I'm just saying now. Don't be no flake with me now. You know, when I say you're part of my family, I mean you in. Now, that mean, I don't mean I'm going to be easy on you now. I ain't saying now. It ain't mean I'm going to be easy. I'm just saying I'm just going to be a lot more. I'm just going to be a lot more understanding that you're family and everything, so I don't have to treat you in the same way that I treat folks who ain't family. So, you know, again, welcome to the family. What do you think about this topic, the N-word? What do you think about us trying to continue this conversation a little bit? You think I'm on track to try to continue this a little bit?
Well, I think it's time that we put it to bed, but we want to give it like we give homecomings, homegoings to funerals, because we're going to have to totally disassociate ourselves from that word. And I think the first step to that is by not getting offended when we hear other ethnic groups use that word, even if it's in our own personal direction. Because it's not what you're called, it's what you answer to. And
Amen.
So when we start to respond to negativity, at some point we become a part of the negativity, even if we are being reactionary. So I think that the best way when it comes to corporate entities and our business entities, people that we patronize and we give our money to, I think that the best way to respond is to redistribute the pain. And we redistribute the pain by withholding our dollars and our need for services from that entity that wants to disrespect us. So I'm not going to pay you to call me a nigga. So I don't need your pizza, and I don't need your media services, and I don't need your, you know, your products that are killing us in the convenience stores or wherever we may go. I don't necessarily need those services, but what I can do, I can take that money that I was going to spend, and then I can save that money. And then maybe I can find me 25 to 50 other people that are no longer patronizing other businesses unnecessarily, and then maybe we can start a fund. And then maybe in 2 years we got enough money to start a business, and maybe we can just start spending money amongst ourselves and spread the love and the respect and the dignity and the pride that we once had amongst each other and appreciate the dollars that are circulating in our own communities. Maybe we can do that. That's how you redistribute the pain.
Yeah, and I like your terminology, redistribute the pain. But, you know, Queen, you know, I got to play this thing the other way and everything because I'm a person that believes that, you know, as a military person, you pay attention to details. You just don't, I think it was Marcus told me to be careful being knee-jerk, you know, knee-jerking to every little thing that somebody else gets you. You know, it's kind of like you on their string or they're pulling, they like the puppet pulling the string. And so I want to, you know, you said something. You said something about the idea of using the word and not being affected by it. But we also got to also be intelligent about when somebody going to cause us to get response or be called, I always say become emotional attached to something when they think they can do this to us. And we got to be intelligent about it. And so my conversation is that I don't think culturally we have talked about what exactly Papa John did, okay? I'm sick and tired. Leonard brought this to my point. I'm sick and tired of somebody else outside my culture, okay, going to tell me how I need to respond and how I need to get emotionally attached to something based on how somebody else has used it. You know, Mr. John Snyder didn't use the word where he said, me showing you up or queen you up. He was associating that terminology of what he thought Colonel Sanders might have said about his employees. And he was doing it in the realm of an educational training among people that he was communicating with in a private section. And then a private organization took that audio and sold it back out to Forbes magazine and got paid. And then and that happened in May. And so when the media came and asked Mr. John Snyder about the terminology, he manned up and said, yeah, I used it. Okay, but I used it in this context, and then all of a sudden, we got it. I'm going to say it. We got the media and everybody telling us that we need to own that word and we need to be bothered by that. See, here's what I'm done with, okay? And I love Marcus, the one kind of shared this one a long time ago. We need to stop being so quickly knee-jerk to everybody else's opinion and ideologies about what that word means to us and how we need to claim and own it. I don't agree that he ought to use it, but I don't want no one telling me that I need to own it and it's specifically the target that I need to keep it and be care about who's using it. I agree with you. I don't answer to the N-word. It ain't me. I care less about it. That's
right.
The real problem, I think that it was taken out of context. But the problem is, look who all responded to it. We are still people so easily emotionally led by what somebody else says about us and everything, instead of being intelligent enough about the conversation. And so that's kind of the conversation I want to stir up. Leonard told me to make sure I turn this show into a open mic. So this mic, I'm going to go ahead and get other people on this. We're going to turn the show. You know, the rules is, okay, the rules is we're going to turn it over. I'm going to turn the mics open. I want to hear from everybody. Okay, this is Sunday, and we want to hear from everybody. And Queen and I are monitoring. And if Queen check you, okay, I'm going to let Queen, you're going to be the one check folks. If they're getting out of carried away, you're the mother on the line. You get to pull them in and say, all right, get carried away, okay? Because
okay.
You're going to utilize it's always the mother of the line. Okay, yeah, and so if someone get out of order and everything, and Queen, and then I'm the enforcer. If Queen said let me say it like a grown man. If Queen say your ass out of order, you out of order, okay? And that simply said, you need to check yourself, right? So we're going to go.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, it's a new day, baby. It's a new day. It's a new day. We're going to try to do something to try to, because, you know, it's keeping it real. Our people can get a little out of order, okay? Yeah, just keeping it 100. You know, we're way out of order, and we need to get a little willed in every day. So all the mics are open. So first person want to jump in. I want to get my two partners to jump in here first. Marcus and welcome to the Focus Show, brother. How y'all doing? Leonard, Marcus.
I'm here. I'm good, man. I'm good.
I'm here.
So, like I said, I'm just in the background listening, and just want to hear what the audience has to say.
Yeah, well, you know, I want you to add to what I said about, do you think that you too, Marcus, do you think a little knee-jerky and a little overreaction from the media, from the corporate? I mean, what's your take on that? Do you think this N-word was overplayed a little bit? Or do you think they have merit that the whole man needs to be stripped from his company, and everything needs to be torn down and everything? What's your take on that from your perspective?
Here's my perspective, okay? If we don't like this stuff anymore, don't like this pizza, let's build our own pizza. And that's how you respond. See, let's not react. Let's respond. So, and if all possible, we could have our own pizza company. It's not that hard. So that way we make his company irrelevant, what he talks about irrelevant, and okay, you can continue. If you want to continue using the word, however you want to use it, fine. But we got our own pizza, so that's kind of where I want to go with that.
What's your take, Mark?
Well, I guess mine is probably a little bit different. While I'm all for being our own economic power and all that good stuff, you know, sometimes it's not racist and sometimes it is. And I think what happens is that we've gotten so used to saying everything is racist that sometimes we take a look at stuff that's not and say it's racist without really understanding that it's not. It may be racially biased and not necessarily racist. And so for me, I don't know Snyder, probably I'll never meet him, but when you look at what it takes to make racism, you know, you have to have the power. You have to be prejudiced. You have to have the prejudice, the power, and then what the person's intent is. And so to me, I don't know that it was racist. It was definitely racially biased. And so I don't know that I'm ready to say he's a racist based off of that. But anyway, my take on it is you have to be look at the situation as a whole, and then determine whether individually that's racist or not, and not just jump up and call it that. And so I don't know that he got a fair shake in that particular deal. I don't know. I don't know all the circumstances. But that's the way I look at it when you talk about how that's used. I don't use it I don't allow my children to use it, right? But
right.
What does it make? Does it make you any less racist for using it because you call it a term of endearment?
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
I'm probably on the other end of the spectrum with that.
Yeah. I think you bring
well,
up
you
a
know,
good
let me offer another example of what has happened recently, okay, whether people know it or not. Okay, so Minister Farrakhan, Minister Louis Farrakhan, head of the Nation of Islam, over the last 3 or 4 years had been doing a musical album, and, of course, he did it on all spectrums of music, all genres. He did rap, he did rock, he did classical, and he pulled in all of these people singing with him, Stephanie Mills. I think he got Snoop Dogg. He got some other classical pianists, some opera singer. Just a beautiful collaboration of artists. And so the making of this album was filmed. And Netflix was going to air the film on July 30th, if I'm not mistaken. And then all of a sudden Netflix decides to, 24 hours prior, to pull the plug on the film. Now, with no explanation provided whatsoever, not here's a letter of intent or anything like that. And in that aspect, when you have the majority of people who subscribe to a service, and let's just say that somebody in your community that you favor, or you might not even favor that person, or you might not even like what the programming is about, but let's just say that if the intent is because you disagree with their ideology, so you decide to pull the plug. And that's your company, that's your business, you have the opportunity to do that. But then let's be fair, because why can't I go on Netflix and see a film about Hitler? But you're afraid of what Minister Farrakhan is going to say. And I'm not saying that because I'm a member of the Nation of Islam, but I'm saying that there's a lot of junk on Netflix that is far
right.
damaging to the psyche, that
yeah.
is far damaging to the culture that it is promoting, the Minister Farrakhan
right.
singing with a bunch of celebrities. I can see slasher flicks, I can see nudity, I can see war, I can see everything Hitler did, I can see all of these terrible things, all these serial killers, but I can't see a minister who's making an album. And to pull it with no forewarning, and you can imagine that if you telling your friends and your family that, hey, this film is going to air on this particular day and you get no notice, personally that affects you. So what I'm saying is that I think that us more than anybody else have been victimized by the lack of power. I'm not going to even point to like Netflix or Papa Doug's or things like that, because they're just small entities in a big pond of problems. What we don't have is that economic authority in our communities, or we don't have those options. You know, if we wanted to cancel cable, do we have a company that we own? Or that
right.
we run, that we can go subscribe? Do we have a utility company that we own? We get mad at the water company. Can we cancel out and say, okay, keep your water out, we got our own? No. These are the things that some entities who are in corporations use against us. And I think it's that we must change. It's that power that we must change.
Good and services is what you're basically talking about. Good and services. I want to bring on one of my longtime partners on the air. He's sitting on the air. Hey, what's up, Keith? How you doing, brother? I recognize your number, bro. Welcome to the Focus Show, man. How you doing, man?
How you doing, sir?
It's all good, man. It's all good. What's your take on this on these terminologies that I want this brother here is a pretty he can tell it like he needs to say it. Now they said, "Well, you ain't got to hold back, man. You can go ahead and explain how you feel." But you and I had a good conversation earlier this week about the same terminology and the use of the word and everything. So, what's your take on this, kid?
I just want to make sure. I think a lot of people don't know. Some people probably don't know the definition of that word. And it depends on what context you use it in. But I think that not every white person is being racist. I think because of our culture, they have learned to use it loosely, real loosely. And that becomes a problem.
Yeah. You make some valid points. Hey, Peter, welcome to the show, man. What's your take as the, you know, as they say, the resident European male that rolls with Dossie and everything? How you doing, brother? How you doing?
Yes, I'm the representative of about a billion people on the earth. So, yes, I'll be their international spokesperson. Let me tell you what the white folks believe. No. Well, you know, it's a very interesting, because, I mean, it's very generational. I mean, the word nigger was used to really dehumanize African-Americans, descended American slaves. So, it's, you know, that's the reality. It was meant to dehumanize people just like other ethnic slurs, like calling a Jewish person a kike or a Italian a wop. You know, I'm grow up in New York, so I know all the names. Us Irish, we were called mix. You know, we had, you know, in New York, you hear all the different, you know, Polacks for Polish people. I mean, you can go on and on. And
Peter, this
you know,
be, excuse me, Peter, this would be a good time to tell your story. This is, tell your story about what you experienced as a kid. I want people to really understand why I got a lot of love for Mr. Peter Hayes. Tell a story. This is a good time for you to tell a story, Peter. Tell.
Okay. And it does relate to what we're talking about.
Yes.
Well, you know, I grew up in foster homes, and the first in New York, and the first foster home I lived with, it was me and my brother. We were, you know, lived in different foster homes. But the first home we lived in, there was a descended American slave, young man, young brother, and his brother. And we were kind of in the same boat. And the lady that we were living with, she was from Germany. And, you know, we kind of thought she kind of escaped from Nazi Germany. She had a property with, like, barbed wire around the exterior, and she was really, you know, very strict. So anyway, we kind of bonded because we had a common enemy. You know, we were fighting this Nazi. And so, but anyway, through that experience, and this was in 1965, so you can imagine how many, you know, black and white folks had a chance of growing up together, very few. And so anyway, later on, you know, probably my third or fourth foster family, I lived with a, you know, really upper, well, a very wealth, a wealthy white family, and we had our own swimming board into the ocean in the backyard. And so me and my brother, we thought, like the Jeffersons, we were moving on up, we had made it. The problem was, and the father was a IBM executive, and the mom worked at the school, and they had three kids. But what happened one time was, you know, we'd all have be around the dinner table together, like a Leave It to Beaver type of situation. And this was probably when I was about 10, 11, so imagine 1970. And something had come on TV about some of the riots or whatever. And so the father, you know, at dinner time, he popped off and said, "Oh, look at them niggers, they're up to causing trouble again." So, you know, we're all at dinner table. So what I did is I spoke up and I said, "You shouldn't call them niggers, they're black people just like us." Well, he got really angry and sent me up to the room without dinner, and he was furious, and he came up and started beating on me, and he was really, I'll tell you, he was really demonically possessed. He was just, like, so upset, I guess, that I challenged him. Anyway, he would go down for 15 minutes and came back upstairs and beat on me some more. Anyway, it was, and the rest of the family didn't know what was going on. So we went through that. And then probably about 6 months later, you know, we're at the dinner table and something came up and he popped off again and said, oh, look at them niggers, you know, they're causing trouble. They're up to no good. And I tell the story, you know, most people as a kid would have said, well, I'm going to keep my mouth shut. You know, I'm going to zip it because I got my butt whooped. But crazy Peter Hayes, I did the same thing. I said, you shouldn't call them niggers. They're black people just like us. And so same thing, bada bing, bada boom. He sent me upstairs and beat on me. And anyway, it was just a very... And the thing is, you know, they were your, you know, upper middle class family and went to United Methodist Church every Sunday. And eventually they got rid of me and my brother. And I think the main reason was they couldn't really break me. But the fathers were so furious that I would challenge him over that. Anyway, it molded me in my life, but the fact that I had bonded with that one brother, and I saw how
right.
he was taking care of his younger brother, like
right.
I was, you know, we created that humanity.
Right.
And anyway, so it is a very charged
And Peter, that's
word.
Why I wanted, yeah, that's why I wanted you to tell your story, because I remember the first time you shared that story with me. Because I also remember the experience I had, not knowing who you were, but you introduced me to Peter Hayes in Louisville, Kentucky, the only European male, put together the Martin Luther King celebration event. And he left one weekend. He told me to go to he told me to go to a meeting where all the people was going to be at, and I showed up to the meeting. You know, I only met you about a week prior to that, and you was going out of town and everything. You told me to go to a meeting where it was going to be people there. So, Queen, I showed up to the meeting, and you know, it's all our folks. I mean, it's all our folks there to meet. What do you think the topic of the conversation was? What do you think the topic of the conversation was? I'm like, what the hell? The topic of the conversation was getting rid of Peter Hayes. I mean, it was
what?
Like, oh yeah. I'm thinking that I come to a meeting to talk about how we're gonna put things together for Martin Luther King event and this and that. The topic was, we getting rid of this white boy, okay? He don't need to be heading up the Martin Luther King event and this, that, and it was, anyway,
oh, wow.
It was so funny because here they are talking about saying how racist he was, whoop, this was, and this and that. But here's the same person who was actually the organizer. No one else wanted to pick it up. No one else decided to do it. He decided to do it, and they was trying to overthrow him. And I remember, Peter, remember when I called you? I said, Peter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was in Washington, D.C., yeah.
I said, Peter, you need to hurry up and get back. Peter, they're trying to overthrow you, bro.
Yeah, and it, you told me the main thing was, you know, we raised money from different companies to do the Martin Luther King Day of Service, and we had 2,000 volunteers. The main concern was that, we were the ones getting the money, and it shouldn't be a white man, you know, promoting Dr. King, and yet no one else in Louisville had done the Martin Luther King Day of Service. They still don't. We're the only ones
from the service to peace. So that's a key. That's how I got to meet Dr. Hayes, and I say here in Louisville, Kentucky, you know, and that's why I also coined the phrase, Leonard and Marcus. I started saying these, the natives, because, you know, I'm not from here. I said, the natives get a little restless here, boy.
Right.
That
anyway.
Is amazing. That
yeah.
is amazing.
Yeah, the funny
and
thing
I
is, too, is we raised all the money.
That people want ownership.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Queen.
Well, I think that people want ownership, especially to, you know, our fallen leaders, our leaders. And what it ends up being is reverse racism. And it is. It's basically reverse racism. You know, it's if we own Dr. Martin Luther King, you know what I'm saying? Or as if there was no one out of the European culture that supported his views. And
right.
so I think that, you know, we don't have leaders in our communities anymore. We have people who have been titled leaders, but we don't have leaders in our community anymore. So we love Dr. Martin Luther King. I never met him, you know what I'm saying, but we love Dr. Martin Luther King, and we love Malcolm X, and we love Mecca, and all of the, you know, ancestors from, you know, before. But I just think that that's a very sad case when we start to respond like that, when someone stands up and recognizes good. And I mean, instead of when someone outside of our race, so I should say, recognizes good, and then we can get together to tear it down, but nobody got together to put it together. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Right,
we can easily, you know, just discredit Peter for his efforts, but none of us made the effort. And amazingly, that happens all of the time.
All the time. And you know, what I've had to do is I had to exercise a sense of forgiveness for us, because when you come to an understanding that we don't, you know, Leonard said this, we don't know what we don't know, and what we don't know, we don't understand, and what we don't know how to fix something that we don't know how to defend ourselves against. And so that's what I believe we are part of DOTSI is trying to do. We trying to give those who characterize themselves the N-word, the Negroes, the Black Knight, we're trying to give them something to be more proudful about, is that we're not as ignorant as the first generation of slaves that were originally let loose after 1619 and then on to 1776, who didn't get incorporated into the, you know, Declaration of Independence because they were compromised as 3/5 human. And then the emancipation, the embarrassing, shameful inhumanity let loose like a dog, you know, with no economic, social, or equal justice. All we're trying to say to them today in the 21st century and is that we're a lot more smarter. We're a lot more knowledgeable. We know who we are now, and I think that's important. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Can y'all hear me?
Yes.
Yes, sir. Can you hear us? Michonne? Okay, Lena, can y'all hear me?
Yeah, we sure can.
Okay, so I don't know what happened to Michonne. Oh, my goodness.
Yep, he must have dropped out. So, okay, so who else is on the line? Can we get some more thoughts from other people who's on the line?
Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Who is it?
This is jazz poet Mike B. How y'all doing?
Mike B. We're good. We're good. We got this topic going about the N-word, and we just dropped a little bit of opinions. What's your opinion about, if you've heard what we've talked about so far, and just in general, just go ahead and just let us know, what your thoughts are.
Well, man, I don't really focus on that too much. It's been going on, you know what I'm saying? It could go 2 miles in one direction and 10 miles in the other, you know what I'm saying? It's like, but instance, my mother, she was one of the directors of the Board of Education, and my father was the first black foreman at Ford Motor Company. So honky or nigga was not tolerated in my household. So, that was something I kind of grew up with, but I heard it most. And what gets me the most is when you see a black person called a nigga by a white person, we go off. But go down to Wyandotte Park, go down to Shabley Park or wherever, and Shawnee, and watch the ball games go on, and it's like, nigga, pass me the ball, nigga, pass me the ball, man. Come on, nigga. Give me the ball, nigga. Black people call black people niggas 5 times more than white people call black people niggas. If we could just focus on taking the, let me see how I can put it, incomprehensible, demoralative part out of our lifestyle, then other people would respect it more.
Wow. I had to call back into my own show, but I'm glad that you well said.
Hey,
Michonne. Say that again.
Hey, Michonne.
Elegant. Yes.
Hello, this is Mike B. Michonne. You're going to have to wait till we call on you because we done went ahead and took over the show. So we'll let you know when you could come in, man.
Okay,
hey, you're in the queue.
I love you, bro.
Hey, I love you too, man. I love you. Hey, it's funny. I had to call you from off the show. But what happened, Queen?
Hey,
they just cut me out like there, man.
Last week in the middle of my show, 30 minutes into my show, they just cut off. So hopefully, and it's been a week, I didn't even do a show last night. I did a rebroadcast. So hopefully by the time I come back on next week, they'll be having the theme together.
All right, then.
All right.
Hey,
in case you don't know me, Sean, can someone tell me, Sean, what we were talking about before he tuned in?
Yeah.
Hey, Queen, you can go ahead.
We were talking about the N-word.
Yeah, y'all just continue talking. I catch up.
I love you, Miss Dorn, man. I really do, man.
Yeah, it's all good, man. It's good. Hey, Mike, you got anything to drop on us about the N-word, man? You got anything? You got any powder? Any poems? Anything you want to drop? You're good for that, man.
Yeah, man. When you were gone, I dropped my little piece on it about how, we go to the parks and we hear blacks calling blacks the N-word more than we hear white people call it. It's just a norm for us, man. Like, nigga, pass the ball, man. Nigga, why you gunning, man? What, nigga, please. That's the one that we always use. Nigga, please.
Right.
The thing is, with me, Sean, man, I'm about to come up on 21 years of sobriety and clean time, and my view is I need not.
Congratulations,
I just said whoop. That's my field, substance abuse and psychology. So congratulations, brother. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, so really what's been keeping me strong stronger. You know, I listen to, I'm been a listener for, I'll say, around maybe 15 of the 21 years. But, you know, my focus for 15 years is I need not focus so much on what needs to be changed in the world. Moreover, what needs to be changed in me. You know, I could stand here and point the finger at everybody in the world, but all I really need to, all God really wants me to do to change the world, all I got to do is change me one defect of character at a time. You know, and that'll change the world.
Yeah, well said.
Well said.
You know, but yeah, I do got one being that it's open mic Sunday. So let me drop this one on you. Jazz Poet Mike B giving it to you. This is called Self-Induced Mental Suffocation. Did y'all catch that? Self-induced mental suffocation. Can I ask you all a question? Ask you a question?
Yes.
Wouldn't it be dumb? Would it be like real insane for a black man standing between the church pew in 2018 and saying, "We shall overcome, we shall overcome, we shall overcome," and not realizing the way we done overcame, baby? Don't get me wrong. We've come a long ways, and we still got a ways to go. But my forefathers and foremothers would gladly tell you so, like Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, even Kunta Kinte would say they remember the day they walked along the way and saw black slaves hanging with bended knees from oak trees. Like what? Strange fruit. And we got the nerve to complain in our $350 go-to-church meeting suits. My country, tears of thee. Man, that song's not written for my baby girls and me. Lift every voice and sing till what? Till earth and heaven ring. You see, that's our motto, because that's what I taught my girls and they say grow. Because when you lead a child down the road of life, you should lead that child with God's speed. Don't you dare in that child's mind plant a negative seed, because one day he or she's going to have a mouth to feed. Teach that child to stand proud and to rise to any occasion. Don't you dare in that child's mind plant the seed of self-induced mental suffocation. That's the state of mind that's ruining our young nation. If you don't believe me, as the spirit of your forefathers and foremothers, like Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, even Kunta Kinte would say they remember the day they walked along the way and saw black slaves hanging with bended knees from oak trees. Like what? Strange fruit. And we still got the nerve to walk around in our $300 church meeting suits. Do we have struggles? Hell yeah, I remember 20 years ago, I sat on the detox bench after all Satan's demons had spent me. But yet with God, here I am on this radio show, I slam, and if they ask you why I came, you just tell them Jesus sent me. Rosa Parks sat so Martin Luther King could march. Martin Luther King marched so Barack Obama could run. Barack Obama ran so maybe Oprah Winfrey could fly.
Ooh. Okay, how they do it in the club? Snap, snap. I can't. You know you can't hear me snap, but snap, snap, snap.
What they do now is come find the poet and throw money at them. That's what they do.
Okay, I'm making it rain. I don't know where you at, but I'm making it rain. There you go.
Yeah. That's where it's at, man. And check this out. What we need to let the world know is I'm writing a new poem. It's called Chocolate Dollars. And chocolate dollars run this world. They run our community. Chocolate dollars is just as valuable. The dollars from the black man are just as valuable as the dollars from the white community. And I'm still wondering why our dollar only circulates 3 times in our community when the white people's dollar circulates 13 times. That's blowing me away. Instead of going and shopping
blowing you away. That's an easy answer.
What you think
that's
the cause of
answer.
That is? The root.
The root of it all is, of
right.
course, of a lack of education about money. And the reason why I say it's a lack of education, because I see so many things that we as a people can do together economically to build businesses and houses of community service in our communities, but we don't do it because we're trying to actually take part in the culture, and I put the emphasis on culture, of American society. So in order for us to keep up with the elite that we see on television or in sports arenas, we spend a lot of money on things that are unnecessary. The weave business is a multi-billion dollar business. The fingernail business is a multi-billion dollar business. But then the community center down your street is closed. The parks in your community are neglected and abandoned, but you can get together with a busload of people and go to Panther, but you can't get 10 people to go to City Hall with you to talk about the issues in your community. So I think it's a lack of understanding of what the so-called American dream is, because your shackles may have been removed, but it didn't matter because now you're enslaved in the mind.
Yeah, I think you hit all over that, Queen. I think, and that's why the N word is our genocide. I just kind of focus on what I talked about here, you know, and I think you hit on it too, as well, Mike B. Is that how can we, you know, prosecute somebody else doing something when we're genociding ourselves? Okay, with the terminology. Okay, I mean, we the people who could not defend themselves, and that's the first generation of slaves. I don't think they would appreciate us allowing ourselves to call ourselves a word that they couldn't defend themselves against. You know what I mean? I mean, do you really think those who were born in after 1619 all the way up to 1776 in the part of the early 20th century, do you really think that they will be proud of us calling ourselves now the N-word? So what y'all think about that? Do you really think they will be proud?
No, I'm sure
they will. You think they will be proud? What do you think about it, Justin? Hey, me, Sean.
Yes.
Hey, man, my daughter and her boyfriend are sitting on the porch listening in on this because I stepped in to the house. And I'm going to let them comment on what you just asked.
Yeah, please do. I mean, the question on the table.
His name is Justin.
Justin, how you doing, Justin? Oh, it's all good. How old are you, Justin?
I'm 30.
Charging.
I can't hear you.
Yeah, I'm 30.
Okay. So my question is, do you think those who were born after 1619 all the way on to 1776 and the early part of 20th century, do you think that they'll be very proud of us now using the N-word like it's water, calling ourselves the N-word, a very word that they couldn't stop the oppressor from calling them? How do you think they feel about us today?
I mean, I think it's very degrading, far as, you know, how far we've come as you know, in our community, and how far people have worked hard and really trying to become, you know, who we are as people.
Right.
And you know, all it does is just make us look like fools by the end of the day, because we get mad at other people for calling us the N-word and all that, but we need to respect ourselves more.
Yeah. So what do you say about the young people your age and younger that says it's an endearment?
I think
they
got too comfortable. Let's let me shine. This is Diamond.
Yes.
Okay, so I just feel like we've got too comfortable within saying it to each other. Like, not necessarily trying to. I just think people got comfortable with saying it because, you know, we were trying to be like, you know, it's nothing to us, you know, like if you say this to us, it's not going to hurt our feelings, but we got comfortable in a different way and just start using it, you know, like it's cool when, you know, I understand it was people that died in the past, you know, for just to make us feel, you know, be respected,
y'all.
Period.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, what was it, Edmund Tillman? The lady that caused Edmund Tillman to be killed. Did you hear that she just confessed that she lied? Queen, did you know that?
No, I didn't hear you. Who confessed to what?
You remember the little boy that got was burned and killed because supposedly he will sue at the white woman?
You talking about Emmett Till?
Emmett Till, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Emmett Till.
She just confessed that she lied. And
what you
think
mean?
About...
I'm surprised she ain't dead yet.
No, hey, well, check this out. Hold on. Mm-hmm. I got to chime in on this. Her confessing it today don't have nothing of a hill of beans to do it. Everyone knew that she lied. Back then, all they just needed was a reason. Everyone knew back then she lied, Michonne. And her saying that she lied now, it don't matter because... Everyone knew she lied. They just wanted to hang a guy.
Let me give some perspective on that right quick.
Yeah.
Because my father, my grandmother, I'm from Chicago. My grandmother actually took my father to Emmett Till in the casket. Here's what the deal was. Emmett Till was from Chicago. He went down south to Mississippi. He was a northern Negro. Can we gotta mute some people as we talk. So like I said, he was a northern Negro and he came down thinking that I don't have to adhere to, you know, things in the South, the segregation and this, that and other. So word had got around and they were gonna teach him a lesson. His uncle, they came and got him and pulled him out of his uncle's house at night. And they beat him. That was a lynching. They call that lynching. They was calling that lynching by beating and shooting. They didn't hang him, but once they beat him and shot him, they took a cotton fan and threw him in the Mississippi River, and they the Tallahatchie River, that's how his body got deformed and bloated like that. So yeah, so that was the deal. He was from the north, and he, you know, kind of telling us it's not like that up north. You know, I talk to white people all the time. I've got white kids in my school, all of this kind of stuff, which was true. Like I said, my grandmother knew his mother. My father, like he was 5 years old. He said when I talked to my father, he said, you know, that one thing he would always say is I would never forget, you know, what Emmett Till looked like in the casket. See? So, but yeah, the woman, she's in Raleigh, North Carolina. She confessed. And that is talking about opening. It's talking about opening.
Oh man, 15-year-old boy, yeah. I'm gonna show it to you. Pull it up on your phone, Emmett Till.
But you know, let me say this. I remember being on part of the set of The Ghost of Mississippi. If anybody remembers the movie with Alec Baldwin and Whoopi Goldberg and some other actors, and I just remember visiting the set during the filming, and we actually was talking to Merle Evers, and the fact that I think his name was Delano Beckwith or something like that. A lot of the people who were convicted of murder, you know, it was long after the fact. And then, you know, even right now today, you know, they're trying to get convictions for the dead or compensation for those who were brutally killed in those eras of civil unjust and when we were fighting for civil rights and things of that nature. I think at that point that, you know, instead of us being so mystified by the atrocities of injustice back then, I think that when they attempt to try to rectify these things, that there needs to be an accountability that is greater than an official conviction of a dead person on paper. That does nothing. That does nothing for history. That does not change the outcome that Emmett Till and many others like him are gone. It does not change the fact that people were allowed to live their lives in happiness and glee for 50 or 60 years after the fact. And I think it's a slap in the face to convict a man or a woman of murder after they've gone in the ground and nobody is here, not their cousins, not their mother, not their father, to even witness the carrying out of so-called justice. So I think that when we start to look at the criminal justice system and those states and those legislations that allow that to happen, then I think that those states and those counties or whoever were involved in that process should actually do something in the community for African-American people, I think. I think that they should erect different services centers and educational centers and actually teach on law and teach things about the history that actually made that occur. Because, see, the one thing that justice is the understanding thereof. And what a lot of the Caucasian people who are so-called the powers that be, they don't want to – I think it's easier to get them to apologize for slavery than to admit all of the atrocities of slavery. Because slavery, when you look at that word, that's a big old thing that happened over a period of years, and it's simply people being kidnapped and brought to another land and allowed to live and work for free on another land. But you forgot the psychological and the neurological damages that have carried on for generations. So you have no restoration places for these people. And if you were taught by your great-grandmother and your great-grandmother passed down that fear and that pain and that hatred and that anger down to you and now you down to the other child and that child is passing it down to their child, there is a generational psychological effect that is taking place. And if you want to own some shit, then repair some shit. That's the way I feel about it, because I don't need you to convict a dead man. That don't do nothing for me. That don't do nothing for all of the children that were not born, because when you kill one, you killing generations. How many people know how many children Emmett Till would have had? How many grandchildren will he have had right now? You're killing the seed. So when you kill the seed, then you need to repair the damage of what is done. And I think that every slave state and every county in every slave state needs to have a restoration center for African American slavery.
Queen, I think that idea of us trying to identify those 15 slave states, those specifically there are already known 15 slave states that are historically identified, especially those that make up the 13 colonies after Virginia. I think that would be the responsibility of Dolphiny and all the networks that we got to make that happen. I think you're right, Queen, some type of restoration of community. But just like Marcus had introduced an article, we got to be right now, we got so many young European millenniums that are starting to believe that, oh, we don't need to talk about race. We don't need to talk about slavery. They don't need there's no need to talk about any form of reparation or anything because, you know, they in their opinion, it sounds like we're so far ahead that we don't need to. But, you know, I'm tired of allowing everybody else to tell our story, and that's where we got to stop. We haven't told our story.
Hey, Sean, can I chime in on something?
Yes, sir.
Hey, you know, there's three things I want to just say real quick. One, I was wondering if anyone has seen White Man's Burden, the movie, with John Travolta in it.
Oh, yeah. If you haven't
watched it, and it'll show how much it'll diffuse anger. That movie can, if you show it to a teenage child, and, you know, there's someone that's angry about the blacks being treated wrong, you know, in 2000, you know, I don't know why anyone child who had freedom that we didn't have coming up. But if you showed it to them, that movie would show them that it's wrong either way it goes, because it puts some white people in the role of the blacks. And another thing is, the second thing is that a thread that runs deep in America is the powers of the Illuminus. It's always going to be a thread that runs through America. For instance, when we were slaves, we was considered 3/5 of a human, right? You familiar with that, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Well, check this out. The biggest sellouts that I've ever seen is Martin Luther King's family. They allowed the powers that be to make a statue, set it in Washington, and let someone carve a statue that only has 3/5 of him showing. Now pull it up on Google or pull it up on YouTube, whatever. That statue is only 3/5 carved. Okay? And the next thing is, you know, I can't believe they stood in front of that statue with 3/5 of their father carved out of the granite just for money. And the other, see, because blacks will allow white people to do things to them because they've been bamboozled. That's one of Michonne's favorite words, bamboozled, meant of blacks. And, you know, pull that picture up, and it'll hit you like a brick. If you dig real hard, and I didn't allow my girls, I won't allow them now to say that white people holding me down, black people holding me down. Check this out. Barack Obama passed a bill when he was in there that they can't even strike down. Now, if you want to go back to school and you have a student loan pending, if blacks want to go back to school, he passed a bill that if you go back to school and sign up, everything you owe will be in deferment. And on top of that, you get $9,000 a semester just to go back. And the blacks, check this out. I'm going to put it like this, and I'm going to say it like this. Some blacks aren't taking advantage of it, and the white people say the niggas ain't taking advantage of it. You know, or some other race would say, you know, they've got it, you know. Hey, did you know if you spell niggas backwards, it spells sagging?
Yeah.
And that's what everyone's doing, sagging. All the youth, man, you know, and the thing about it, if you was in slavery and you tried to hold your pants up with one hand and pick cotton with the other free hand, they would beat your ass. Man, what are you doing, dude? Well, I'm sagging. I'm out here in the field sagging. But they can't even grab jobs because they're pulling their pants up. Hey, who's going to ask someone in the interview? I won't even eat in the Kentucky Fried Chicken. I don't eat land animals anyway, but one of the reasons that I don't eat in fast food restaurants as much is because they always reaching back to the crotch of their ass, whether it's the split of their butt, to pull their pants up. I don't want all that on my food. You know, I mean, it's just so many things. But the thing that I want you to do, I want everyone in earshot of what I just said. When you hang up, you pull up the picture of Martin Luther King, and you'll see him.
I'm going to post it on Facebook right now.
In the same, check this out, that's in the same city with a full body sitting Lincoln. It's in the same city with a full statue of six other presidents, 400% carved statues. And the King family, let the powers that be carve out a picture of a statue of Martin Luther King, and it's only 3/5 finished. Now, that's the biggest slap in the face to America. You know, I mean, to the black race.
Everything is symbolic to European
Americans.
Well,
Michonne, hold up.
Yes.
So that's not accurate. And so the powers to be is Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity who paid and raise the money for that. And he's the only non-president there. So all those people he mentioned that are presidents, that's accurate. However, if you look at the purpose for it and the way it was and the reason and the inspiration for it, it has nothing to do with being 3/5 of a man. See, this goes back to what I said before.
Have you seen
Let me finish. I didn't say anything while you were talking. This goes back to what I said earlier, which is everything is not always racist, but sometimes it is. And you can make everything be racist if you choose to and travel in that circle and then whine and complain about what happens there. But see, you've made something out of nothing because that was not the intent for that. But you've made it into that by something that has nothing to do with being 3/5 of a man. But that fits your conspiracy theory for it. And I'm okay with that. But before you spread that, you figure out and know how that stone and that particular monument came to be. You may not like it, and you don't have to. But that's not true what you just said about why it came to be that way.
I was talking with one of the best prominent sculptors, Ed Hamilton, which lives in my city. And I mean, you know, if there was 1,300 black sculptors in the United States.
Is he a member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity? The sculptor that you make reference to, is he a member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity?
Am I?
No, the sculptor that you make reference to, is he a member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity?
I don't know, man.
So you can talk to any prominent sculptor you want to, but I'm a member of that fraternity, and I'm telling you how it came to be. And so regardless of what that sculptor says about how things are done, he has no idea about the concept of where this came from, and so I don't dispute his being a noted sculptor, but he's not a member, and he doesn't have the inside knowledge that I'm telling you right now.
Well, then let me say this. Then it's just coincidental.
Yeah,
well,
family has nothing to do with that.
It was sculpted by an Asian brother, so.
Yeah.
An Asian brother.
And the King
that's
family,
I
just to clarify,
I know who sculpted him, but
his
inspiration, his guidance came from the fraternity.
Is it a black fraternity?
I know who sculpted it.
So let's just look at the history
of
it.
It is.
No, I'm saying that 3/5 of a man bullshit is exactly what that is, so that you can further a conspiracy theory. That's all I'm saying.
Not everything
that happens is racist, and sometimes it is. I got that. But we cry every single time. We cry that every single thing that happens is racist. And because we do that, when something really happens that is, we've cried wolf so much. We've cried wolf so much that nobody pays attention to it.
Hey, man, check this out. I had nothing to say about race. All I was saying, hold on. All I was saying that it's coincidental
gentlemen,
that it's 3/5
what's your name, Mike B? Hold on. listen. The best way to correct is to educate, okay? That's the best way, not with no contention, but to educate. So let me share something with you. It says the memorial is a result of an early effort by the Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity to erect a monument to King. King was a member of the fraternity, initiated into the organization V Sigma chapter on June 22, 1952, while he was attending Boston University, and he remained involved in the fraternity. Okay, so after King's assassination, the Alpha Phi Alpha proposed erecting a permanent memorial to King in Washington, D.C. The fraternity's efforts gained momentum in 1986 after King's birthday was designated a national holiday. Now, under the United States Commission of Fine Arts, somebody had to design this statue. I do know that there were a lot of people, Caucasian people, Bill and Melinda Gates, Walt Disney Company, filmmaker George Lucas,
right.
a lot of
all that
people
money had to be privately
donated
raised.
Monies to mm-hmm. Raise $120 million that it cost to erect the statue. So I think it's true what Marcus is saying. And then I think that, you know, looking at the memorial, I can understand what Mike B is saying, that it appears to look that way. So the key thing is anytime we see something, you guys, let's utilize technology and let's try to, you know, get the history behind it, because actually I think the design came from one of us. So, and I think it's more having to do with his speech, the mountaintop, than being three-fifths of a human being. So, you know, let's just research wisely, and then let's take the time to speak.
It's just a coincidence. I retract everything else. It's just a coincidence.
Yeah, and you know, we got another call. We got a couple new callers that came in. I want to, before our time run out, I want to give other people who've been sitting here listening to this conversation, you know, to chime in. I got this 502-0746. I don't know who that exactly is, but you've been on the line. And you want to make a comment to the program that's been listening?
Yes, I would like to make a comment, brother. And you've heard this voice before. You heard this voice last week.
Yes, sir. How you doing, Doc? Yes, sir.
I'm good. Can you hear me, brother?
Yes, I can. This is Professor Robinson. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Go ahead. Okay, first, on the word nigger. Can you hear me, brother?
I hear
God did not call us nigger. All right? That's the social construct of the Anglo-Saxon. They needed a way to what? Dehumanize the black body. So any tag that they put on black people, take away from their humanity, would make it much easier for them to exploit them, dehumanize them, rape them, and sell them down the river. That's the first thing. The second thing is, like my brother Mike B, I don't know the brother yet, but he said something that's very true. He said, like, when a white man calls us nigger, we get upset. But when we call each other nigger, it's okay. And like the queen said, this has been deeply rooted, impacted in our psyche, this calling of the name nigger. So by residual chattel, even though we're not property anymore, we have aligned ourselves to being property residually by default by calling one another nigger as if we're still on the plantation and not giving honor to the legacy of what our ancestors and forefathers would deny. Why would I want to hold up the banner and perpetuate a lie when I know I'm not a nigger, when God made me a man? That's all I have to say.
Amen
right
to
now.
That. Amen.
Hey, and that's our local. I'm claiming you, brother. That's our local Dossie professor. Hey, thank you, brother. Hey, you are.
Okay,
there.
I hope
thank
that what I said
input.
Was profitable for all the ears listening, because we got a true battle, man. And the true battle is from descendancy to ascendancy. And like Queen said, that's through education. It's not to tear down our brothers, but to build them up as we dialogue for truth. And we raise that banner of truth consciously through dialogue like this, so that we can go and educate the masses. And that's all I have to say, because there may be someone else in the queue, brother. Much peace and love to all of you all on this line.
Hey, thank you again for chiming in.
Thank you.
And make sure you don't make this your last. Hey.
We'll see you tomorrow then, brother.
Okay, then. Take care. Hey, I am so glad that we turned this into a conversation that we got more people communicating and everything, because what good is it that we listen to ourselves and we don't have other people chiming in? And I'm glad we turned this into that type of show. I know, Mike B, you want to chime in? Hello?
Hello?
All right, listen up. Our time is getting short, and what I want to do is that, as always, we give everybody the opportunity to have about a few minutes to give a closing point as we're closing out the show, because I got another meeting I got to go to, so we're going to close the show out. So, Queen, you are the lady of the house. You be last, okay? You're going to close us out last, okay? Peter started out as being the only European male on the line. You represent the European culture. You start us out, Peter. Go ahead.
Yes, as the spokesman for all Caucasians, I thereby proclaim. No, in all seriously. You know, I think this Dossie could take up this challenge to get the community to stop using the word nigger. I think it would be very important, because as I was listening, you know, I mentioned earlier the different slurs of different ethnic groups. I don't know of any other group that uses the slur that other people put on them to self-identify. Like Polish people don't call each other Polaks, or my ancestor, we don't call each other mix. You know, that would be just totally outrageous for someone of to use the racial slur that people who don't like you. So it is very strange, and I think you talk about something. I think it would be a great national effort and really put Dossie on the map to start
a
national
well
campaign.
Said. Well said, Peter. I mean, appreciate your comments, man. You always, brother, always welcome to the show, man. And we get the next person here, the 8199. Who is that? Come on.
This is Jazz Poet Mike B. Hey, man, I just want to say that make a comment, the last comment, as far as people talking about the diversity, holding blacks back. One thing is the people who are complaining that the national anthem should be sung and are beating people down that aren't singing it and are kneeling. If those people had to sing the second stanza in there where it says America won't be satisfied till every slave is in their grave, that's the second stanza. If they wouldn't sing that song at all. But they'll complain about us protesting about it. But the same people who protesting about it won't sing the second stanza of it. They left the second stanza out. They won't even sing it because it mentions The United States won't be satisfied till every slave is in their grave. That is the version, the second stanza in the national anthem. So, amen. I appreciate this. And the brother that was commenting about what I had said, man, a true man will take a look at what another man says and take inventory. And I'm going to do that, brother. I promise you, because steel sharpens steel.
Hey, Mike B, and that's your, and you that type of brother, man. Keep doing what you're doing, man. Appreciate you, Mike.
Love you, bro.
All right. Hey, get the next person. That'd be my number. Okay, no, that I'm already talking. 9361. Who's that?
9361. Yeah, this is Keith. I just want to say
Keith.
I enjoyed the show, and I hope we continue this dialogue because we have a long way to go.
Yes, sir. Yeah, thanks for being here, Keith. And tell my wife I'm going to be there real soon after I have this quick meeting. So I know she done called me, told me when I'm coming. So you just hold it down for me, Keith, until I get there, man.
All right.
And hey, the next person, Leonard. You want to go ahead and make some comments?
Yeah.
Leonard?
I'm here. Briefly, like I said, I like this open format. We'll clean it up a little bit as we go more and as we get into the future of doing it like this. But, yeah, this was a great show. Heated debates, and you made some great points. But I think, like I said, it's we have to move forward.
Right.
Honor our ancestors. Our ancestors would not be proud of us calling ourselves the N-word. Okay. When, like I said, is that something they try to escape from being? And when you understand what that is, that slave, a chattel slave, property, you're not properly a human being, and we need to be moving in a direction of self-determination, just like Dr. King, the statue of Dr. King and Dr. King, what that should represent. So, that's all I got to say about that.
Well said. Hey, Marcus, you go ahead, man. Add something to this, so it closes out with your comments.
Yeah, okay. All right, real quick. For Mike B, I don't know you, but I'm going to get to know you. You sound like a person that I could get along with. And I, too, always take a look at what somebody has to tell me and make whatever adjustments, because everything is fluid. And what I will say is that nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him a little bit of power.
Well said there, Marcus. Well said there, bro. Hey, you and Mike B will become good friends, man. Mike B is a good brother, man. You appreciate Mike B. All right, man. And Doc, you are still on the line, man. Before Queen, you get to add your you already done solidify yourself, but you go ahead and add some more to the conversation there, Doc. Go ahead. Dr. Robinson.
Oh, yeah. Can you hear me, Doc?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I've just compared with everybody, man. Basically, we got to move forward. Right now, you have the seeds for something to become a national conversation. Start locally. Get back in North Carolina. Target those 15 states. Build your base and create this great momentum movement for self-identification and change for our people. It's time that we become the leaders that we are. It's time that the world recognizes that we are 40 million strong, and we're here to stay here, and we're going to be here, and people are going to remember who we are. Our legacy is to our children. We have to hold the banner now and speak the truth. That's all I got to say, brother. I'll save the rest when God is ready to use me.
Hey, brother. Thank you for being here, man. This is I can't hold it in. Queen, go ahead. Take it, Queen.
Wow, it's so much. I just want to say that going forward, that the most important thing is education. And through education, you can produce healing. But what is so often happening and what so often happens is that we get caught up in our egos. We get caught up in our personal lives. We shake a finger at the negativity that we see in the street, but we don't stop to make a change. So I think it's the responsibility of all of us who feel as though we are educated and who feel as though we understand the problems, is that we reach out to our people and that we take the time with our people, because we want to talk about economic justice and we want to talk about fairness and equality. But if we're not on the same level of understanding about humanity and love and dignity and pride and family and village, if we don't understand that, it doesn't matter how much money you get. It doesn't matter if the laws change and they become fair, whereas projecting equality, if we're not doing it amongst ourselves. So I think in order for us to build a better and stronger nation, we have to be about it indeed and not just in conversation. And that's my comment for today.
Well, and we come to a wrap show with Dotsie. I want to appreciate each and every one of you. We are in overtime. I'm looking at the thing. We ain't got no more time on the clock yet. I love y'all all, and I'll be talking to you next time. Stay focused. Follow one course until successful. And I think we are on course here, on focus. Take care. This is the Focus Show.
Peace.
Peace. Is it? Wow. Woo. What a show. What a show, Michonne. What a show.